Good evening. I'm Michael Linder, and this is the last program to be broadcast on KNX from Columbia Square, the home of this radio station for nearly seven decades. It is a challenge to capture the story of 6121 Sunset Boulevard and all that has happened here, the thousands of men and women who have come to Columbia Square for generations to perform, to entertain, to report and deliver the news. But with the help of some of my colleagues, we're going to tell you the story of Columbia Square before the switch is flipped and these studios fall forever into silence. You're about to hear some of the most amazing sounds ever broadcast on radio. We'll even go on a ghost hunt down these historic halls before the on-air lights flash at our new studios on the Miracle Mile. Now, there's not a lot of time to say goodbye to Columbia Square, and we've got lots of ground to cover, so cue the orchestra.
From KNX in Hollywood, countdown to the KNX of tomorrow as we bid farewell to Columbia Square for 67 years, the home of the voice of Hollywood. This is Michael Ambrosini. For the next hour, you'll hear the triumphs, the tragedies, the comedies and dramas, the great moments in radio history that sparked to the airways from this temple of broadcasting on Sunset Boulevard, beginning on April 30th, 1938.
Columbia Square is on the air. From KNX, the voice of Hollywood, the greatest stars of radio, screen and stage unite in a salute to Columbia Square, dedicating Columbia's new headquarters on the Pacific Coast. A fitting climax to the greatest day in radio history.
What a day and what a night. A blimp hovered over Sunset and Gower, lit by floodlights. Thousands of people spilled onto the sidewalks outside Columbia Square as the grand opening broadcast began coast to coast and relayed to Europe by shortwave and carried across Canada on the CBC.
A salute to Columbia Square.
We present the punchline artist of the big broadcast of 1938, Bob Hope.
I don't have to tell you again that this is a beautiful building. It really is. It looks like the Taj Mahal with a permanent wave. I mean it. Oh, it's really the last word in broadcasting stations. Very swanky. Even the janitor wears formal overalls with tails and uses a platinum blonde broom. I wish you could be here. And really, everything is so modernistic. Disappearing microphones, disappearing fountains, disappearing lighting effects. Reminds me of my last program. I had a disappearing sponsor. But my... But really, you should see this theater here. So modern, it seats 1,200. Oh, I'm sorry, 1,201. Phil Harris has a girl sitting on his lap. I didn't see that over there. And it's so clean. They have a germ-proof microphone, a hermetically sealed control room, sanitary door handles, sterilized scripts, and they tell me before each broadcast they're going to boil the ushers. But really, it's a beautiful building. All the Columbia officials came out by airplane from New York for the opening today. They found out how much the building cost, so they're going back by bus.
Many who have come to Hollywood, KNX played a number of parts before it landed the role that has become its destiny. The station was born in 1920 in the Hollywood bedroom of Fred Christian, who built a 5-watt transmitter and played records borrowed from music stores. He was LA's first DJ. And like a struggling actor, KNX changed addresses a lot, moving from one studio to another, around Hollywood and Sunset Boulevards mostly. But when CBS founder Bill Paley bought KNX in 1936, he began designing the most advanced, most glamorous, and most expensive radio studios ever built on a truly historic site, as Cecil B. DeMille noted on Columbia Square's premier broadcast.
25 years ago, Jesse Lasky, Samuel Goldwyn, and I rented a barn in an orange grove half a block from here and made one of the first feature-length motion pictures, The Squaw Man. It was on this street that D.W. Griffith made The Birth of a Nation, the first big American screen spectacle. The Christie brothers filmed their famous comedies on the very ground where this magnificent new radio center stands shoulder to shoulder with the modern motion picture studios.
World-renowned architect William Lescazzi built Columbia Square in the style of international modernism, with sweeping streamlined motifs, porthole windows, and glass brick. Its design is as architecturally significant today as it was in 1938, but Columbia Square's form followed function. Bill Paley, then just 36 years old, summed up the concept as he inaugurated his new studios.
we have built a workshop. I mean by this that these premises were built to give new and better tools to the engineers and producers and artists who will use them. They were designed to help produce better programs, programs that entertain, programs that inform, and programs that make people think. It is because we believe that these new Hollywood headquarters, reflecting many innovations of design and acoustics and control, will improve the art of broadcasting, that we have built them and are dedicating them tonight.
But the opening night of Columbia Square was far from a solemn occasion.
Al Jolson himself.
Thank you, Tiny, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, Al, before we go any further, what's your reaction to this wonderful new building?
Well, to me, Tiny, it looks like Flash Gordon's bathroom. But, Tiny, I don't know. I'm only clowning. Really, this building to me is magnificent. And let me tell you something. It's so modern, and there's so much steel and concrete in it, that when I came in tonight, there were 15,000 termites walking up and down the sidewalk, picketing the place. Go ahead, applaud if you want. I don't care. And another thing, Tiny, do you know what this building actually cost?
Al, I haven't got the slightest idea.
Well, I'll tell you, and it'll surprise you, too. It cost $37 billion.
Wait a minute, Al. You're thinking of the national debt.
Who isn't? Thank you, thank you.
Columbia Square was built at a cost of $2 million in 1938. That's more money than had ever been invested in a radio broadcasting facility. Paley wanted a showcase to attract Hollywood's biggest names, and he got them. Actors, directors, writers, producers flocked to Columbia Square.
Well, it was the heartbeat of West Coast radio. It was a nexus for talent on the West Coast.
KNX entertainment reporter and radio historian Leonard Maltin.
And radio, which had come of age in New York and Chicago, moved to the West Coast to get talent, to get the Hollywood people involved. And so the New York people and the Chicago people, I know for a long time, sort of looked down on Hollywood as a stepchild. They had the real actors. They had the real dramatists. And in many cases, they did. But over the years, great talent developed and was nurtured here. And some of the best shows in radio history came out of this building.
Our special guests, Humphrey Bogart and Charlie McCarthy.
Oh, Mr. Bogart.
Hello, small fry. Met me, pal.
Huh?
Pump the palm.
Oh.
Don't touch that dial. Listen to...
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Detective Agency.
Oh, murder.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, starring America's favorite young couple, Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard.
Hey, Mr. Andy.
It pays to be ignorant.
Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, is on the air.
William Paley believed in quality. He believed in paying for talent. He believed in nurturing talent. But he also was willing to go to extremes to get the people he wanted on the air. And in the late 40s, he pulled the most astonishing coup in radio history, maybe in show business history from this point of view. He raided NBC. And in one fell swoop, got a handful of major stars, most importantly, Jack Benny, to jump ship and come to CBS.
Quiet, Jack. We're on the air.
Okay. Gee, I hope I'm good tonight.
J-E-L-L-O.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson.
But he did it through a very clever device. They could declare themselves properties. Jack Benny was not a star. He was a commodity, and he had a show called The Jack Benny Show that he owned and could sell to CBS without paying a big penalty in taxes. It was such an appealing financial offer, all of the big stars said, I'm doing it.
Branch
Transcribed from Hollywood, Procter & Gamble's Tide, the wash day miracle that gives you the cleanest clothes in town, proudly presents the Red Skelton Show.
Yes, it's George Burns and Gracie Allen.
I can't imagine what the folks at the Rival Network thought when one day they came in to find out that five or six of their biggest stars were leaving.
NBC's David Sarnoff was infuriated and so worried the Pele raid might not be over that he immediately signed Milton Berle to no less than a 30-year contract. But the damage had been done and Columbia Square had been packed with stars.
The Columbia Broadcasting System takes pride in bringing you Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air in another broadcast of a unique series which signalizes radio's first presentation of a complete theatrical producing company. For these programs, the regular member stations of the Columbia Broadcasting System are joined by the coast-to-coast network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexander Dumas. And here again is the director, the star, and producer of these broadcasts, Orson Welles.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. There is no reasonable explanation of Alexander Dumas. He was a rich man. We note with interest that he went bankrupt in the theater. He was a revolutionary. His grandfather was a marquis. His grandmother was a negress. He was born as Napoleon became emperor. He died in poverty as the Germans marched into France.
With stars like Orson Welles, there was little arguing with the CBS nickname, the Tiffany Network.
Next week at this same time, another great narrative brought to life by Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air. The Man Who Was Thursday by G.K. Chesterton. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And while news and soap operas on the CBS radio network mostly originated from New York City, Columbia Square became home to the premier radio dramas and comedies of the day. And when it came to comedy, Jack Benny was king, arriving weekly at Columbia Square to perform his show to standing room audiences.
See, the station is crowded. Rochester.
Yeah, boss.
Put on your red cap and carry my bags to the train. I got to meet my gang.
Train. Yeah. For Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga.
Gee, we're all supposed to meet here at the information desk. No one. Oh, there they are. Hey, Phil, Don.
Oh, hello, Jack.
Hiya, Jackson.
Say, what are you carrying there under your arm?
Well, I heard it was pretty cold in New York, and I want to be on the safe side.
But Jackson, a smudge pot.
Well, I'm not taking any chances. You
train
know.
Leaving on track 5 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga. Does anybody want to go to Anaheim, Azusa, or Cucamonga?
Say, Don, have you got all the tickets?
Well, not quite, Jack. At the last minute, Phil said he needed an extra one.
Phil, who are you sneaking on this trip with you?
Well, it's Frankie, my guitar player. I got to take him along on account of the magazines.
The magazines?
Yeah, he reads to me.
Oh, for goodness sake, now I have to buy another ticket. Well, I'll meet you later, fellas. Now, let's see. The ticket window ought to be...
Train leaving on track 5 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga. Oh, come on. Somebody must want to go to Anaheim.
I absolutely feel a sense of history every time I drive onto this lot and walk through the front door. It's an amazing place. Even the nature of the studio. We're sitting right now in a studio at KNX that's, you know, not lavishly appointed. It's not particularly distinctive. But there's something about being here where you know this wasn't just put up yesterday. You can feel that. At least I do. And I'm sure anyone with a sense of history would feel the same.
Making those shows at Columbia Square was a defining moment in the lives of their writers, producers, musicians, sound effects guys, as well as for the artists and the announcers. Art Gilmore worked on Dragnet, the Red Skelton TV show, and radio's glory years at Columbia Square.
I started in September 29, 1936, when CBS bought KNX. I did a program called Dr. Christian. We did that show for 17 years. We did the show at 5:30 for New York. Then we went out to dinner and came back and did it all again for the West Coast. Dr. Christian was Gene Herschelt. We had an audience of about 300, and I had to go out and warm them up, get them feeling good, and that's about 3 or 4 minutes, and then the curtains part, and we're on. Music comes first. Ivan Dittmars played the organ, and then I open the show and do the commercial.
From Hollywood, California, we present Gene Herschelt in another Dr. Christian story called The Cornerstone. Brought to you by the Cheeseboro Manufacturing Company, owners of the trademark Vaseline, and producers of Vaseline Petroleum Jelly, Vaseline Hair Tonic, and other Vaseline specialties.
How is she, Doctor? A little more comfortable, I think. But how is she actually?
We just had a wire from Lucy asking whether she'd better come on. What shall I tell her?
I don't know yet. There's a chance then, Doctor, that Mother may not pull through.
Yes.
It wasn't an exciting show, you know. It was very good, and I would tend to read my commercials, and then I'd turn to the back page, and then I'd be ready for the close. This particular day, I thought, well, I'll follow the script, you know, see what's going on. And all of a sudden, I heard snapping, really snapping their fingers, and it was Gene. He was down to the last page in his script. He had left 7 pages up in his dressing room, and we were live. And so fortunately, I was following, and I just laid it down, and he did the rest of the show. But those things are people don't know about.
Your announcer is Arthur Gilmore. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Announcer George Walsh performed on some of the best radio dramas, and he stayed with KNX through the early years of the all-news era. He first picked up a microphone at Columbia Square on
May 22, 1952, and I was hired as a vacation relief announcer. And the vacation relief announcer's job lasted for 34 years.
Like many others who spent their lives in broadcasting, George Walsh found a home at Columbia Square and says there was magic at the Sunset Boulevard studios.
There was always a crowd there. There was always a crowd there waiting for an audience show. And it gave you a feeling, gee, we're doing great, aren't we? It was the big league. They had studios 1, 2, 3, and 4 on the main floor in the main building. One was a large studio. We used to do Gunsmoke there. Gunsmoke was a radio show for many years before it became a TV show. You can still catch the TV show on the old reruns. I was lucky enough to be the announcer on both radio and TV. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the colors and the spoilers. That's with the U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with the U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke.
Now, what was your motivation that brought you that great gun smoke?
Money.
Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad.
William Conrad was a star, of course. Parley Bear, who took the part of the second lead. George Ellis and Howard McNear, all top people. And as soon as the show was over, they'd all rush out into the lobby where they had a telephone exchange called RAGE, Radio Actors Telephone Exchange. And all these people would immediately dive for the telephone to see what other jobs they had that day. And they had plenty of them.
Suspense.
Suspense was an interesting show. Suspense was the last dramatic show on radio network. And I was the announcer on that. I used to give it the old, and now, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. It needed the shimmering strings and the gongs in the background.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Miss Agnes Moorhead in The 13th South.
We were driving too fast, but I knew that if I slowed down at all, I would begin to tremble. And so, although the road was torturous, climbing steeply up the mountain, I kept my foot pressed hard on the gas pedal. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see that my husband was looking quietly into the green valley far below. He looked peaceful now. He had made his speech about driving too fast. I'd asked him to be quiet, and now he was quiet. I wondered what he would do if I stopped the car and told him right then that we were driving up to the Johnson house so that I might kill him.
My daughters used to call me Spooky Daddy. we always had a famous star with a lead in that, and I just kind of stood there at attention and saluted. And of course, there were other fellows who were nearly as lucky as I was, and all they did was station breaks for KNX, but I was very lucky.
George Walsh went on to win a Peabody Award for his all-night classical music program, Music Till Dawn, fed from KNX to 10 CBS stations across the West. And Walsh made the transition to the all-news format of the KNX of today.
This is John North. News, soap operas, comedies, and dramas weren't the only shows that originated through KNX and CBS in Hollywood. In the late 30s, 40s, and 50s, music from the big bands was a programming staple broadcast coast to coast in the evenings through the facilities here at Columbia Square.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or should I say good morning. It's Happy New Year from Hollywood with the music of that sentimental gentleman, Tommy Dorsey, his trombone and his orchestra from the bandstand of the luxurious Hollywood Palladium on Sunset Boulevard near Vine in the heart of the film capital.
The big bands were the rock stars of yesteryear. Many of us would pack the various dining and dancing venues.
CBS sends you the artistry and rhythms of Stan Kenton and his orchestra.
If you didn't live near one of these big band meccas, all you had to do was turn on your radio at home, roll back the rug, and you and your best girl could start the party. One of the biggest venues in Hollywood was located almost next door to Columbia Square. And all the CBS staff announcer had to do was walk across El Centro Street, get the cue from the engineer, and open the broadcast.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bill Baldwin inviting you to 30 minutes of delightful dance music being played for you by the best-dressed dance band in the land, the young man with the horn, Ray Anthony, his trumpet and orchestra, Ronnie Doville, Betty Holiday, and the Skyliners to entertain you, all from the dancing center of the West, the world-famous Hollywood Palladium, here on Sunset Boulevard, just a few steps from Columbia Square in the heart of Hollywood, California.
Square kept America dancing with music originating from nearby ballrooms throughout World War II. And as that war drew to a close, CBS marked the event with one of the most legendary radio programs ever produced, one that is still played on radio to mark the anniversary of VE Day and Memorial Day.
When victory appeared imminent in Europe, the program chief at CBS came to me and said, we'd like you to interrupt the series that you're now doing and have ready for broadcast on the night of victory in Europe an hour program. In prime time, we will sequester this and we'll take it away from a sponsor and give it to you to write and direct and produce. And I agreed, of course.
For the next hour, the Columbia Broadcasting System presents On a Note of Triumph, a special broadcast written and produced by Norman Corwin for this day of victory. Martin Gable is narrator, and the music is by Bernard Herrmann. Martin Gable in Norman Corwin's On a Note of Triumph.
But they did not say how much it's going to cost. They did not say what's your approach going to be. They did not say who will you cast. They left it to me. That spirit of freedom to say what you want to say and not have somebody vetting you with a red pencil poised to make edits was a very rare and wonderful thing in radio and is not to be found anywhere today.
So they've given up. They're finally done in, and the rat is dead in an alley back of the Wilhelmstrasse. Take a bow, G.I. Take a bow, little guy. The Superman of tomorrow lies at the feet of you common men of this afternoon. This is it, kid. This is the day. All the way from Newburyport to Vladivostok. You had what it took, and you gave it. And each of you has a hunk of rainbow round your helmet. Seems like three men have done it again.
It was a wonderful harbor, a port, a haven for people who felt strongly about radio and its mission and its character and its opportunities. And I was lucky enough to be in that generation, at the right place at the right time at the right network. Columbia Square was one of the glories of radio. It was somewhat sacred to those in the industry. First of all, it was a handsome building. It was the Louvre of radio in those days because so many great people had been in it and worked in it, and their voices had come out of it, their music had come out of it. It seemed to me like a kind of mecca. At that time, there was nothing quite corresponding to its splendor in New York. 485 Madison was the headquarters, and that was a high-rise in an area of high-rises and had no particular architectural distinction, whereas KNX did and does. And when the wrecking ball, if there is a wrecking ball involved, does its work, I will be a very sad mourner.
This salute to Columbia Square will continue immediately after station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is KNX, the voice of Hollywood, on the air from Columbia Square.
Welcome back to our salute to Columbia Square as KNX prepares to open its new Miracle Mile Studios, a major change for this radio station, and not unlike the years following World War II, when Los Angeles was fast becoming a megacity of freeways and ranch-style homes with two-car garages. A time of optimism and a new sound from Columbia Square.
This is KNX.
The days of big radio drama and comedy were drawing to a close. Arthur Godfrey was still on the air from New York, Art Linkletter from Hollywood, but radio was clearly in transition. Here at Columbia Square, the big radio studios were converted to Columbia Records recording studios and to TV studios, too. Radio, which once ruled the square, now got pushed off to the second floor. And with the changes came a new generation of modern radio personalities. Tuning into KNX, you might hear Ralph Story.
And welcome again to Storyline. Continuing on the line for Friday the 13th. It's enough to strike fear in the hearts of the superstitious. This is the program that makes the connection between you and the world around you from 1 through 5 daily. On the line, Pat Buttram, Ruth Ashton, Dennis Bracken. Standing by, KNX home gardening expert Dr. Robert Atkinson.
And Steve Allen drew a sizable studio audience to Columbia Square for his nightly show, even though it aired at midnight.
Hello, everybody. This is Steve Allen with Square from Columbia, speaking to you from Columbia Square in Hollywood once again. And inviting you to stick around and have as much fun as this gentleman is right here in the front row. We're going to play at least one record tonight, and we have several other features, chief of which is... Don't forget him. Why beat around the bush, ladies? Here he is, Al Jolson. Huh? What do you think?
This is way past my bedtime, you know, Steve. I generally am in bed at this time. But I just, honestly, I go to bed. I really do.
Well, that's the best way to go to bed, Al. You know that.
What? Feeling bad?
Go honestly. Now,
well, I want... Listen. No, at my age, I'd rather feel good going to bed. But anyway... But let's carry on from there. Hi.
We're a little late, folks. Good night.
Well, see you again sometime. Been nice knowing you.
You folks were real nice. It was awful sweet of you to come in tonight. I want you to give yourselves a great big hand. Will you do that? Sleep. Played no records whatsoever, with the possible exception of our theme song, which is a record, and I like it. And, well, that's about all from Columbia Square.
KNX Los Angeles.
There was Bill Balance, Reg Kordick, Jim Hawthorne, and a man never at a loss for words, Michael Jackson, who arrived at Columbia Square in 1965 to do what he does best.
Talk radio, every evening, 8 to 11 p.m. Talk radio was utter pablum. Our job was to burp the listener. No discussion of race, religion, or politics was the mantra. Our job was just to chat. I mean, boring at first. But gradually we stretched the bounds, and we met all of the most fascinating people from every walk of life that you could imagine.
I've always been a fan of Dorothy L'Amour's, and I just wondered if she had any tips.
You won't believe this. She doesn't recognize the voice, so help me. Honest, honest, she doesn't recognize the voice. Could you give me a little more, sir, so that she might...
No, all I know is I was passing 1/5th Avenue about 40 years ago, and I heard...
Oh, I don't believe it!
I heard Dorothy L'Amour sing,
And you threw nickels at me, and you still got the second nickel because you bought your purse with the first one.
I must tell you, before you came on, Mr. Hope, I said to her, there's a young kid really on the line who wants advice on how to get into showbiz. And she said, what do I say to him? I said, lie.
So now the day is at hand when we are to vacate, to be giving up the old Gower Gulch studio here on Sunset Boulevard and moving into ultra-contemporary studios. I'll truly miss walking the halls covered with every kind of broadcasting award you can imagine. When I last worked here, over 40 years ago, my office was up on the third floor, right next door to the station's top talent, the biggest morning name. I remember being envious of his success and his obvious talents. And then, when he was murdered, Bob Crane, I realized that one should never envy anyone.
Thank you very much, Mike. And we'll get back to Dick Chamberlain and John Gary again in just a minute. It's 25 minutes before 11, in case you're leaving the house. There are no sig alerts or traffic bulletins right now on this beautiful Saturday morning. This is Mr. Andre Previn at the piano from his latest album. I can give you anything.
Bob Crane's morning show put KNX on top of the charts. From Marilyn Monroe to Frank Sinatra, Crane brought the biggest names in Hollywood to Columbia Square.
Phyllis Diller is currently appearing with one of our guests this morning, John Gary, at the Crescendo Nightclub here. And our other guest, of course, is Dick Chamberlain.
I ran into Phyllis Diller in San Francisco in an elevator once.
Yes,
and she was wearing the most extraordinary fur coat I'd ever seen. I said, Phyllis, what a great fur coat. And she said, it's my skin.
Oh, dear.
She's funny.
18 minutes before 11 on the KNX clock. This is KNX Curious Radio in Los Angeles, 1070 on your AM dial, 93.1 on your FM dial. We're going to be talking once again to Rudolph Frimmel at 10 minutes after 11 this morning. Also, a reminder, this coming Monday, we're going to have Frankie Lane and Leon Ames as our in-person guest. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have, you won't believe this, but Norman Vincent Peale is going to be on the show.
Oh, the good life. Full of fun seems to be the ideal.
Crane stayed at KNX until 1965, when his starring role as Colonel Hogan on the hit TV series Hogan's Heroes sent his star soaring until his murder in June of 1978, as he slept in his Scottsdale apartment. His murderer has never been found. And that brings us to an interesting question. Of the hundreds of thousands of people who have streamed in and out of Columbia Square over the years, are any still hanging around after death? Is Columbia Square haunted? My colleague Diane Thompson has been walking the halls and studios in the hours before dawn in search of lost souls.
They're here.
67 years of broadcasting history are tied up in Columbia Square. Thousands and thousands of people have worked, laughed, and cried in this building, and now they're dead. But some of them never left.
Yeah, there's definitely a presence I feel in this room. There's no doubt about it.
KNX production director Raul Moreno says there's always something happening in his studio. At least once a week, his digital audio recorder rewinds on its own.
All of a sudden, I literally saw the buttons being pushed. It went into rewind totally on its own, and I had to go backtrack and see where my project was that I was working on. But yeah, that happens, I would say, at least once a week. And it's not the machine. I see the buttons being pushed, and that is kind of freaky.
Strange things have been happening in Studio 5 since Moreno's first day on the job 7 years ago.
The strangest thing, I think, for me has been when I've seen patch cords come out of the patch bay by themselves.
And you're across the room.
I'm completely across the room. I'm nowhere near it.
When Columbia Square first opened in 1938, Moreno's haunted studio was an office for the radio scriptwriters. It was converted to KNX Master Control in the early 60s, and that's where comedian Bob Crane hosted his popular morning radio show for more than 10 years. Crane was dubbed King of the Los Angeles Airwaves.
After that opening, I'm not sure I should tell you. This is Bob Crane again.
Oh, hello there.
Hello there, Charlie.
Is Bob Crane haunting Studio 5?
You'd be surprised how many people can't see me.
Enter the International Society for Paranormal Research. Founder and parapsychologist Dr. Larry Motz tells me Columbia Square has its share of ghosts.
Entities are only people, and, you know, no little devils or demons running around. What we deal with are people that no longer have a physical body, that have died technically, but they remain earthbound because they have issues.
And Bob Crane definitely has his issues. He was beaten to death with a tripod in 1978, and no one has ever been convicted of that crime. During a recent ghost investigation at Columbia Square, Bob Crane spoke through clairvoyant Carrie Roy to fellow team member Dana Smoller about his issues and why he's still hanging around the building.
Scotty's in trouble. Big trouble.
I know.
Scotty is?
Yeah. Scotty's in huge trouble.
Apparently, Bob Crane's entity is very upset with his son, Scotty, who's running a website detailing the comedian's secret sex life and selling X-rated videos.
It's not right. It's not right. I totally agree. I'm not even smiling. Seriously, I totally understand. It's not cool. It's not good. But I don't know who else is doing it. They're all doing it. It's all everything. They're telling you everything. Don't you know? It's all over. That's all anybody talks about anymore. And what about everything else I ever did? No one talks about that. No. Are they talking about that?
But Bob Crane isn't the only entity with issues.
Now cut that out!
The ISPR team ran into Jack Benny in an area of the building where the original Air Studios used to be. Studios where shows such as Burns and Allen, The Charlie McCarthy Show, and The Jack Benny Program were recorded.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our program.
Clairvoyant Carrie Roy says Jack Benny feels hurt and betrayed by the things that happened to him at CBS.
He said he was the biggest star that they ever had here, and they let him go. He made so much money. He can't believe that they ever let him go. And he said nobody did anything about it. Nobody did anything. Nobody stopped it. Nobody did anything about it. They pushed me out. They pushed me out. And nobody did a thing about it. He said he's mad. He knows that he knows about the big guy who's here. He said he made him a lot of money. He said I made him so much money. He said I was the biggest thing that he had, and he pushed me out. He pushed me out.
The network dropped the Jack Benny program in 1964 and replaced it with Gomer Pyle USMC. Carrie Roy says Benny took it personally.
He said I was good, I was the best person they ever had, and they pushed me out. He said I didn't even have to come here. He paid me a lot of money to come here, and I didn't even have to come here. I could have gone anywhere else.
Ain't you Jack Benny?
Yes.
How do you like that? Don't you remember me?
No, I don't know.
I'm Harry Gilmore. You and me went to Waukegan High School together.
Waukegan High School?
Yeah, don't you remember? I was the one voted most likely to succeed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, got my own cab.
Oh, well, isn't that nice?
Yeah, certainly is.
Hey, what are you doing now?
He said they ended my career.
By far the most interesting entity the ghost investigation team encountered was on the fifth floor. That's where the most influential man in the broadcasting business had his office, William S. Paley.
I smell cigars. This is, whoever this is the big guy. This is the big guy.
In 1928, Mr. Paley used $400,000 from the family cigar business to buy the struggling UIB radio network. He changed the name to Columbia Broadcasting System.
And I sat back with such enthusiasm for it, I just couldn't understand anybody having any doubt about the future of this medium. I thought I could see tremendous possibilities of it as a communications medium, not only for entertainment, fun and laughter, but for information of all kinds.
Clairvoyant Carrie Roy says Mr. Paley is angry about his business and won't be leaving the building until every single brick is gone.
He's upset about his business. He's done so much work for this. And it's not just because he's dead that he doesn't understand why he's not still running this. He's still running this, and nobody's listening to what he's saying.
According to Carrie Roy, Mr. Paley is furious with a man named Larry.
He's talking about Larry, and he's saying really terrible things. He's yelling. I can hear him yelling, and he's yelling. I just hear him saying things I can't say right now. Without expletives, he's saying that he ruined his business. I mean, he's just furious. He did everything his whole life, everything. He sacrificed everything for this.
In 1986, when CBS was the target of several hostile takeover attempts, Lawrence Tisch seized control by spending $800 million to buy a 24.9% stake in CBS. During his 9 years, Tisch slashed $30 million from the budget, laid off hundreds of employees, and closed three news bureaus. The network dropped to third place in the ratings. Carrie Roy says Mr. Paley is simply beside himself.
He's upset about everything that's happened to his business. He said he made this the best. He made it the best. And it's Not anymore.
When a heart attack claimed William Paley's life in 1990, Walter Cronkite said this about his boss.
He brought to a young business an exquisite taste which set a standard for the early days of radio and the whole radio era and certainly the early decades of television.
Are the ghosts of Columbia Square upset that KNX is moving? Clairvoyant Carrie Roy says no.
They're actually kind of fine with it. They've been here for a long time. They've seen the changes that have come and gone, and I think that they're ready to move on. I think that they're ready to leave the building.
Diane Thompson, KNX 1070.
This is Chris Stanley. By the mid-1960s, television had taken center stage and radio was being pushed off to the wings. The grand 1,200-seat Studio A had become Channel 2 News when the TV station was still called KNXT. Radio dramas and comedies were fading into the radio ether. And in 1968, the CBS-owned radio stations, including KNX, took on a new incarnation as all-news stations. Reporter John Goodman was on the startup team as KNX segued to an all-news format.
It was chaos at the time. They brought in new people from all over the country. I had been the Sacramento correspondent for KNX. They brought me down along with seven other people. We had no idea how we were going to do this. They had a format laid out, and we hoped it all worked. And we just bumbled along for a few weeks, not really knowing what to do, how to do it, where to go, those type of things. And the catalyst for the all-news format for KNX was the Robert Kennedy assassination that happened 6 weeks after we went all-news. And everybody at that time then seemed to know what to do, how to do it, where to go, and what to say.
Senator Robert Kennedy has been shot. The man is now calling for a doctor.
All of a sudden, this man came at him with a gun. It sounded like a cap gun. All of a sudden, I saw a man lying with blood. I don't know if the senator was shot or not.
Senator Robert Francis Kennedy died at 1:44 a.m. today, June 6, 1968.
And that's what gelled KNX News Radio. And you have to remember, back in 1968, there were no cell phones. There were no computers. If you had a story, you had to run and find a payphone, of which there may not be any. You had to go to gas stations. Sometimes on a breaking story, you even went up and knocked on somebody's door and says, "Can I use your phone?" Because that was the only way you could communicate.
Robert Kennedy's assassination at the Ambassador Hotel was the first major story KNX would cover in what has become a tradition of gathering and reporting the news, not only from Columbia Square, but wherever the story was breaking.
To Charles Manson, Helter Skelter means the black man rising up against the white establishment and murdering the entire white race.
Here are the headlines at 6:09. Strong reaction coming in to verdicts in the Rodney King beating trial.
Well, the worst is starting to happen. People in their cars have been beaten up. A number of terribly injured people dragged out of their automobiles, and then they were just beaten in unconsciousness.
Mayor Bradley now taking a stand.
We don't want you to resort to violence. That would only destroy every positive thing that we have been doing.
The city of Los Angeles has been declared in a state of emergency.
Well, the people are pretty angry, and they picked up the flares, and they just started burning things.
This looks very much like a war zone. As I fly over the horizon, it's one fire after another.
I'm looking for broken windows, but I don't see any. All right, that's the second time my car... That's the third time my car has been stoned, and I am getting out of the area.
We understand that Rodney King is now approaching a microphone.
I just want to say, you know, can we all get along?
The all-news format was another grand experiment for CBS, whose bosses gave the concept 5 years to prove itself or have its plug pulled. That was 37 years ago.
When Extra News out of Tijuana was the only source of all-news radio in the city, there had been a staff of anchors down in Tijuana pretending that they were covering news in Los Angeles without a single field reporter in Southern California.
KNX News Director Ed Pyle.
KNX had what we used to call an army of field reporters, and we did.
They're the KNX reporters, and they're on the move. KNX News Radio's top flight team of field reporters know how to serve you best.
Pete Moraga, Jerry Lair,
Barry Rhodes,
Fred Kraft,
John D. O'Connell.
This is Boyd Harvey,
Walt Hoffman,
Larry Atterbury,
John Goodman,
Alex Sullivan,
Beach Rogers,
Ron Headley,
Dan Blackburn,
and I'm Mike Landa.
They're part of the big difference here on KNX News Radio.
There are people here still who have been here 30, 35 years. And when you have that, people have a depth of knowledge through experience that you don't get at many stations. And I think it's extremely valuable, and it gives you credibility.
This is KNX 1070 Los Angeles, broadcasting from studios in Hollywood, which have been shaken rather severely. And our Tom Sermons is just now joining me in News Central.
Having just emerged from under the desk in the main newsroom.
Listen, this is the latest. We've had at least one freeway collapse.
We have been getting...
bridge collapse at 10 at Fairfax. Do you copy? That's the report.
Okay, that was Bob Tur once again popping in on us. A bridge collapsing at along the 10.
Not only is there major damage here at the Cal State Northridge campus, the science building number 2, which is a three-story building, is on fire.
But once again, right now, a major search and rescue operation underway in the Northridge Meadows apartment building.
It was a very exciting time. There were technological changes that allowed us to feed from the field. We had to have that because we were doing radio virtually 24 hours a day, and you better have the people and you better have the equipment to get the job done right.
The winds are literally creating pillars of fire as this brusher chews up acreage on its way to the Pacific Ocean.
Those flames have now jumped that driveway, and they're moving up within now just a few feet of our mobile unit, Barry. Now, look here at the south. Those flames are just going out of control now, and I think caution would dictate to move.
People became excited by radio news in those times because they didn't have to sit through some sort of variety programming to hear the noon news or the 4 o'clock in the afternoon news. It was a very exciting time.
All you need to know. KNX 1070 News Radio.
Most lanes are empty with the exception of people that are trying to get a look at OJ. We have actually people driving along that have joined this pursuit, and they are indeed getting in the way of officers. This is a deadly situation. Not a lot of radio communications from below right now because they are handling it on the ground, and they are making contact with him. And they are pleading with him to get out, give himself up. This is the end of the road. There's nowhere to go from here.
Let's go back to Gail Eichenthal.
O.J. Simpson is putting on latex gloves, a single glove on his right hand. He's about to try on glove recovered at the crime scene, gesturing as if he just can't get it on any further.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Orenthal James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder.
All right, the defendant having been acquitted of both charges, he is ordered transported to an appropriate sheriff's facility and released forthwith.
But despite the diligence, the hard-nosed reporting, the attention to detail and getting the story right, sometimes things just didn't go according to plan.
Our subject, the British Broadcasting Corporation, and its English lessons for...
Where, how, why, what happened to who? You should listen and you would know too.
Now, but my colleague George Waltz, who's standing by with news of the nation.
You know, I haven't got any news. I've got nothing but war story.
The nation and the world. George, all yours.
Thanks a lot, Gene. You're only getting better. Morning, noon, and night, get it first, get it right, KNX News Radio, Los Angeles. During the next half hour, you'll hear lots of things. For example, KNX News Radio correspondent. All we have to do is look at each other this time in the morning, and all of a sudden, it's all gone.
California Indians bounded out an 8-6. Make that the Cleveland Indian. The winners, that is, meet on Thursday and make that Saturday. California's Dick Mann drove around a number of accidents this afternoon to win the grueling 200-mile Daytona motorcycle race. This word just into KNX News Central. Former world flyweight boxing champion Jackie Brown had been ailing for several years. At 6:15, this is Don Schrack with KNX Weekend Update, sponsored by Chevrolet.
Ooh, did that crazy thing.
The temperature at Columbia Square, 92 degrees. The temperature, I should say, the time at KNX News Radio, 153.
Things you always wanted to know are all right here at 1070. KNX News Radio.
Well, the time is near. Only a few more minutes until these studios fall into silence, and a new suite of KNX studios will spring to life on the Miracle Mile, where new traditions and a new chapter of radio history will be born.
67 years ago, the staff at KNX broadcast in a totally different way. Now, they are going to be moved into the 21st century. Now, KNX is even being broadcast in high definition for those people who have the sets to receive it. If you saw that the physical operation of KNX, you realize it was really in the 1950s.
Pat Duffy, Vice President and Market Manager for the Infinity News radio stations in Los Angeles.
I mean, I think that there's always something lost when there's change. KNX has been in this building forever. It's associated with Hollywood. It's the last radio station to operate in Hollywood. I think that there's some nostalgic hurt going to be felt by some of the people that have been there. They're seeing their lives change. On the other hand, it's not the way broadcast is done now. We have to get KNX, which is one of the great signals, one of the great radio stations in the United States, into the modern age.
So off we go to our new digital future, saying goodbye to Columbia Square, where broadcasting giants shape the art and craft of radio. Their voices still echo at KNX.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I feel like Ma Jode in Grapes of Wrath. Didn't her heart ache at the thought of leaving the old homestead where this one was born, that one died, and others suffered, the struggles and disappointments, the brief moments of joy and triumph? Now I understand why her answer was no, it wasn't hard to leave at all. Like life itself, working in this building meant sometimes awful pressures, occasional great rewards. This building always had me looking back to the 30s and 40s, the little Art Deco touches, the ancient RCA control boards. I cut my broadcasting teeth on them, and I still love them. All that connected me with the pioneers of this business who flew by the seat of their pants, did it live and made it live and did it right. And the radio dramas performed here. You know what they say, you gotta believe it to see it. Well, they made you see it. This is where the pros work. But that time is gone. Some of the equipment still is here, mere props now. The old hardwired control boards with Bakelite knobs, a clattery typewriter here or there. But the incredible energy and optimism and dynamism about the new medium being born here came about because it was time for it. Those incredible radio personalities who sprang from vaudeville and silent movies, the newsmen who were converted newspaper guys, their meeting together here was casual, accidental, fortuitous, fateful. Maybe it was destiny. I feel them, those bigger-than-life, fearless pioneers still walking these halls. But it was a time, a milieu, a glorious accident of history that made them all gather in this now hallowed place. And it's over. You can gather together all the old casket-shaped RCA mics and tube amplifiers and wooden script stands, the Art Deco signs blinking on air in red. But the time is gone. It's just a memory now. How lucky we here at KNX were to feel its heartbeat one last time. Michael Ambrosini, KNX 1070.
Thank you, Michael, for wrapping up this audio sketch of Columbia Square. Impressions, really. There is no way to capture 67 years in 55 minutes, and it's our regret so many of the voices that have spoken from Columbia Square's microphones were not heard in this program, along with their stories. But the next time you drive past Sunset and Gower, take a look at Bill Paley's streamlined Studio of the Future, now part of the past. And remember that radio happened there. This is Michael Linder. Good night from Columbia Square.